I would like to call the October 3rd meeting of the Columbia City Council to order. And tonight we have special guests from Cub Scout PAC 992. And they are here to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. So, Scouts, would you like to come forward? And all please rise and join us. Thank you very much. A job well done. And let me thank Councilman Trapp for arranging that invitation. And I would dare say if there are other scouts that are studying citizenship, that you are always welcome to join us for the Pledge of Allegiance. Madam Clerk, could you call the roll, please?
Mr. Thomas?
Here.
Ms. Nauzer? Ms. Peters?
Here.
Mr. Treese?
Here.
Mr. Ruffin?
Present.
Mr. Trapp?
Here.
Mr. Scala?
Here.
Our next order of business will be approval of the previous minutes from the September 6th meeting. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? I know, Mr. Trapp, you found an item that has been corrected. Any additional changes or corrections? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the September 6th meeting minutes as distributed?
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made. Motion second. Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. We'll have minutes from the September 20th meeting available at our next meeting. Are there any adjustments to the agenda, including the consent agenda this evening? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the agenda as distributed?
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made, second by Mr. Ruffin. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
The agenda is approved. Tonight we have a special item to recognize one of our city employees as a special enforcement officer of the year from his professional organization. Is John Benish with us? John, welcome. Please come forward. And may I also bring Bruce Martin forward. Mr. Martin, we're proud of you. Thank you. Go ahead, John. The floor is yours.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, as Mayor stated, I'm John Benish. I serve as the president of the Missouri Association of Code Enforcement. And this year, we're very pleased to be able to present this to Bruce. He's a great person. He always helps us. Yeah, we have a lot of meetings here in Columbia. All we can do is call, and he's right on there finding us a place to have a meeting. He's been so much help for us. And he was, this year, he was brought forward by, I believe, did you bring him forward? Did you submit it? Yes, you did. Okay. And he's well deserved of this. Like I say, we've been working with him for many, many years, and I'm really pleased to be able to present this to him tonight. We've got a plaque here for him, and it states, in recognition of your tireless efforts, dedicated commitment, and outstanding contribution to the field of code enforcement, Bruce Martin, 2016-2017, Missouri Association of Code Enforcement Officer of the Year. So we'd like to really congratulate him and present him this.
Mr. Martin, we want to thank you for your service to the City of Columbia and the example you set to your colleagues across the state. And Mr. Benish, thank you. I understand you're an employee of the City of St. Charles. So
yes,
thank
sir,
you.
I am. I'm the code enforcement manager for the City of St. Charles.
Thank you for joining us here in Columbia.
Thank you for having me.
I hope we're up to snuff.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. City violations, I like you, sir. You're good.
Excellent.
Thank you. Good job.
Very good.
Thank you,
Mr. Martin. Madam Clerk, do we have any appointments to boards and commissions tonight?
No.
We do have a robust vacancy list. If anyone has a desire to serve on a city board and commission, please take a look online, and there are several opportunities to serve on volunteer boards and commissions. We do have several opportunities for public comment at our city council meeting. Those who contact the city clerk's office prior to the agenda coming out on Wednesday can request 5 minutes at the beginning of the meeting. And we have three such reservations tonight. Is Kim Wischmeyer with us? Kim, please. Thank you for joining us.
I'm Kim Wishmeyer. I'm a resident at 904 Bourne Avenue in the 4th Ward. I want to thank you for this opportunity. The mentioning that I have here is code enforcement on signs. I just received the position of board member on our local neighborhood association. And first thing off the bat, my phone started ringing about signs. So rather than me making enemies with my new neighbors, I thought, well, they are violating the city ordinance. I'm going to let the city handle it. The answer, the response that I got from the city is the one that I hate the worst is, we really don't want to offend someone. Laws are written to be enforced, okay? The city sign is 32 square foot on any one property. The property that people were calling me about had three such signs all in a row where you had to pull out in the traffic. They were all political signs, and I don't care if they're political signs, construction signs, Burger King signs, whatever. They make the small ones, and I drove down Broadway tonight, and there was yards full of the small ones. They weren't offensive. I know it's political time. However, the law is the law. Construction, I'm in construction. There's a general contractor on every job who wants his name out there to be known, okay? Well, so does all the subcontractors. But we're only allowed one sign, 32 square feet. That's 4x8. Now, putting aside all the, I'm not a very PC individual, so I don't care what offends anybody. I'm a proud veteran, so if I'm waving the flag and it offends somebody, tough. Okay, until you walk in my shoes, that's just too bad. The signs need to be enforced. Okay, whether they're Republican, Democrat, Whig, I don't care, but they need to be enforced. It is a city ordinance, and my position on this is I would appreciate that we get somebody doing it or find somebody that will. And I'm talking about employees, since I was told this by the city employees.
Very good.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. A good reminder. Our next scheduled public speaker is Renee Maxwell. Ms. Maxwell available?
Good evening. My name is Renee Maxwell. I'm a resident of the First Ward. I live at 201 4th Avenue. Thank you for having me speak tonight. I'd like to talk to you about racial profiling in our community. I've heard that our police chief does not believe that racial profiling is a problem in Columbia, and this concerns me a great deal. You can't solve a problem unless you admit that the problem exists. It is my experience that when discussing sensitive racial topics, many white people become defensive and are quick to assert that they are not racist. Nobody wants to be accused of being racist. We think of racists as very bad people who are ignorant and backwards and hateful. And it's true, some of them are. But generally, people who are openly racist and hostile towards people of color are really, they're not in the majority, thankfully, most places. But here's the thing. Dear white people, we're all a little bit racist. And yes, that means me too. I am a little bit racist. And it doesn't feel good to say that. I don't like to think of myself that way. It makes me really uncomfortable. But the fact of the matter is that all of us who were born and raised in this country have been immersed in a racist society from birth. We must acknowledge that the reality of systemic racism. It is inherent in all of our institutions, our justice system, our education system, our economy, and our culture. This is precisely why we cannot achieve racial unity and address our deep divisions until we, white people, are willing to acknowledge that systemic racism is real. Only then can we accomplish the necessary work to heal our deep racial divisions. So I stand here today to say to all of you that I am a racist and so are you. And if that makes you uncomfortable, then good, it should. Sit with that discomfort for a bit. Because it pales in comparison to the discomfort and pain that people of color experience and endure every day as they navigate their way through a racist society. Please understand that acknowledging racism is not about making accusations and assigning blame. It is a call to action and a demand for change. The only blame is for those who deny that racism is not a problem and who refuse to act. That is a denial of reality and the lived experience of people in our community who are affected by racism every day. That is unacceptable. Some people think that we shouldn't make such a fuss about racial profiling. It's not as if one of our police officers has killed an unarmed black man. You want to think that that could never happen here. Our officers are better than that. And maybe that's true. I hope it is. And that's all well and good, but that's a pretty low bar to set for our police department. Well, at least they haven't killed anyone. We can do better. And as a citizen of this city, I demand better. Chief Burton has said that we don't have enough data to prove that racial profiling exists in our community. And yes, it would be nice to have more data available to analyze this problem. As a software developer, I appreciate the value of good data. But I also know that there's a real difference between more data and useful data, data that is relevant and actionable. It takes a lot of time and effort to collect that kind of data. It takes a lot of time to analyze that much data. It's expensive and time and a very time-consuming process. And while that may be valuable and worthwhile, it shouldn't prevent us from acting now to address racial profiling. The only thing we need to know in order to address racial profiling is that systemic racism is real. Systemic racism is the underlying cause behind implicit bias and the subtle yet insidious ways that racial biases affect our behavior and our decisions. Not just police officers, but all of us. It's really that simple. Honestly, this should not be controversial. It is not a radical statement to say that systemic racism exists and we should dismantle it. I expect more from my community. I demand more. This is my community, and I will not accept racism in any form. We should hold ourselves accountable and do better. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Our next speaker will be Andrew Hutchinson.
Good evening, council members.
Good evening.
Does this work like this? Wonderful. Okay, so I would kind of like to begin by telling a story. My name is Andrew Hutchinson. I know you, Mr. Thomas. I know Lauren Auser as well. I grew up here. I went to elementary school all the way through high school here, and now I'm a history and sociology major. As you can see, I've been in here for a very long time. I'm very proud to call Columbia my home. Here's a picture of my family, if you don't believe me. Lovely family, great people. We love eating out. My grandmother, brother, et cetera, et cetera. So one thing about my family is I was grown up with a Latino mother, Democrat, Catholic, and a very conservative father, white, libertarian. But one thing that was interesting is we did not grow up with any firearms in our household. I grew up with a lot of family friends who grew up around the country in the rural parts of Boone County. And they took me out shooting when I was 18 years old, maybe 19, March 2014, if you want to know the exact date. His name was Jameson. He's a U.S. Army veteran. And he said, every man should know how to fire a gun. And he gave me the rules, right? He displayed this firearm in front of me. And he said, there are three rules when you handle a weapon. You assume that it's loaded. You assume the safety is off. And you don't ever point it at something that you are not willing to lose. And he said this as an Army veteran, and he said this as someone that, we would hang out, we would have fun, we would mess around, we would wrestle, but one thing that you never played around with was a firearm, and you did not point a firearm at another person unless you were in very severe danger and had a reason to do so, which is why it was very disappointing to me when, in August 14th, 2016, I saw this video of an incident that occurred March 7th, 2015. Which you can see from the body cam of a police officer, of kids standing in the street, of him pulling a firearm and pointing. Now, you can look up the article and the articles that have come where they say that, and I don't really want to play it because honestly, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the officer who later says, oh, I could wipe the floor with those kids, or and how they mock them for being skinny, and how they are openly exchanging insults. While this officer, from his body cam, you can see him pointing a loaded firearm. Now, something that I didn't discuss earlier is that I am an employee of the Moving Ahead After School program. I work with young, low-income, at-risk youth, and I run poetry workshops in the little bit of time that I have. We did them in the summer. I've done poetry shows in all sorts of places, and I worked with these kids that I know, that I spend every day with. And we did a sort of personal statement. What does it mean for you to be a man, or what does it mean to be a woman growing up? And when a 13-year-old, before this video even comes out, says to me, 13-year-old young black boy says, for me, being a man in Colombia means being always aware of where I am and who I'm with and the time of day, because that is the difference between life and death and life and imprisonment. He said that to me. I didn't put those words in his mouth. A 13-year-old boy has full implication and understanding. And that's my issue, is that I know how my students feel. I know how my classmates at the University of Missouri feel with the LBC incident that occurred last week. I know the national perspective. I'm a history and sociology student. We talk about it every day. And the issue is that I was scared, because this is my home, right? This is referred to as the Athens of the Midwest. It's a college town. We're smart. We have a black studies program. We're great, right? So I put together a Know Your Rights presentation. I brought in members from the Bukowski Law Firm, the Office of Probation and Parole, and I sent an email on to Officer Mike Hester of the Community Outreach Program to come to this Know Your Rights presentation to discuss issues of policing and police inequality. He said that he would attend, and they did not attend. And I never received a courtesy email explaining why they did not attend. So what it comes down to is that we have officers who are pointing guns at children for walking in the street, and community outreach teams that do not even consider sending an apology. If something came up, I'm so happy that they took care of that than coming to just a community outreach event. But I've received no word. And I think silence, not to echo the phrase that is so often repeated, but silence is violence in this case. And I would really appreciate it if Columbia could really try to pull up and do a little bit better. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. I'm sure you'll hear more. Our moving on to next order of business, we have one public hearing tonight regarding the construction of the Henderson Branch Sewer Extension Project. I know there may be some other issues on the agenda that people are concerned about. This is the only such issue that will have a public hearing this evening. Of course, we also will have the consent agenda and introduction and first reading as well. Madam Clerk, you want to call the first order of business in public hearings, please.
Public hearing 2016 is the construction of the Henderson Branch Sewer Extension Project.
We have a staff report.
Yeah, for the benefit of the public, most of you know this is a proposed sanitary sewer system improvement project that includes the design and improvement of approximately 8,600 feet of gravity sewer that would ultimately serve the Henderson Branch watershed. In terms of location, this would extend the sewer from the existing Perchy Creek Interceptor Sewer to a point just north of I-70 and I-40 interchange right next to the Midway Auto Plaza. As most people on council know, and the public's probably aware, the construction estimate for this project has increased significantly since we first brought it to council. The construction estimate for the project now that we talked about in July of this year is $4.3 million and would be funded by sewer bonds, sewer enterprise revenue funds, along with a contribution from the Boone County Regional Sewer District. At the public hearing on July 5th of this year, council did table the public hearing until today so that staff would have additional time to work on about three different issues, which included an additional contribution from the Boone County Regional Sewer District, providing information, data in terms of a cost-benefit analysis, and also the issue of annexation. You will find in your packet tonight that staff has provided many of the answers to these questions in the supplemental memo that's dated today, but there are still many loose ends that we still need to tie up, including a definitive answer from Boone County Regional Sewer District regarding their contribution. And I think your packet did contain a letter from them dated last week, September the 28th, indicated that they need more time to consider the city's requests. So with that in mind, staff is requesting that you table this public hearing until November the 7th so that we can provide additional time to finalize this agreement along with a few other items related to this project.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff? Mr. Scala.
Yes, I have some questions. I mean, I think we ought to honor the staff's request to table this issue because of the, quote, loose ends that are still out there. I know that I've been in some discussions with Mr. Potterfield, some of the principals in this whole issue, and I'm sure the staff has these ongoing discussions as well. I must say that I'm just a tad disappointed that there hasn't been any movement on this in the discussions that we've had to date. And I, to the extent that we can apply any kind of urgency to this issue in terms of annexations and extensions of the sewer and so on and so forth, given the circumstances of some of the folks that are within the city who have been waiting for years for some sewer relief. I mean, all of these are considerations. There is a sense of urgency here. I would like to get some movement on this issue at some point, but I'm certainly willing to extend the time necessary to continue these discussions to see if we can come to some sort of resolution.
Any additional questions? One? I'm inclined to support the request to table as well, although I will say with respect to the questions that council asked during the previous hearing on this matter that my decision tree on this has always been that it would have to include some type of annexation agreement and with that annexation a clear cost benefit analysis. And I appreciate the council memo and the numbers that you've put together. I would suggest that before it comes back that is a little more complete and includes all of the proposed revenue from annexation, whether that's property tax or sales tax or motor vehicle tax or gas tax or cigarette tax or electric tax, telephone tax, whatever it may be, along with all of the proposed expenses from that annexation, including our police and fire and community development and road maintenance and street lights and fire buyout and you know fire hydrants, tornado sirens, all of that data amortized over a 7-year period, so the council actually has a true cost-benefit analysis of what we have available. And again, the other litmus test is voters, in my mind, approved up to $2 million for this project. We're now exceeding $4 million. Where's that cost participation for the two end users of this or the or the Boone County Sewer District with respect to their customers, which as far as I understand, those users would remain their customers. So anything I just meant for your recognition?
I think maybe
Mr.
just
Thomas.
In the interest of sort of sharing a few opinions about this issue, which might be helpful at this point if we're going to table it for 4 weeks. I disagree with you, Brian, on the annexation. I actually... I'd almost prefer to provide the sewer service at an appropriate price to the private beneficiaries of this project, but not provide annexation, because I think our comprehensive plan and the will of this community is to try to consolidate our footprint in Columbia and not sprawl across the other side of the Perchy Creek and need to provide all kinds of additional public services over there. If there's a way to adequately compensate the sewer utility, I think I'd really prefer to look at that. And I've become increasingly uncomfortable with our policy, which is in place at the moment, but I'd like to discuss considering making changes to that, that in order to provide sewer service to somebody outside of city limits, we require them to annex in. I don't think that's consistent with our comprehensive plan or with our vision for the future of the city. It used to be seen as a benefit to annex more and more land because of the wealth of property and sales tax we receive, but I think analysis shows that we actually lose out in these deals for the most part. Carl.
Thank you. Any additional comments?
Yeah.
I think Carl wanted to just jump in on
this. Mr. Scala, for what reason do you seek recognition?
I guess I'm going to make the motion to table this in November 7th meeting on behalf of the staff who made that recommendation. I tend to disagree with you, Mr. Thomas, in terms of this annexation consideration, if you will. I think we really ought to be dealing with the potential for annexation. I mean, this is a big leap past Perchee Creek. I mean, this is a monumental leap. We've been anticipating this for some period of time. We have become a little bit, I hate to say it on this council, but a little bit more conservative as to how we look at the costs associated with annexation and extending sewer and so on and so forth. We haven't gotten a very comprehensive look at this. We've just gotten kind of a piecemeal approach. I'm not criticizing the staff for not giving us enough information. I would like more information. But this whole idea of, you know, both hard and soft infrastructure, the hard infrastructure is obviously extending the sewers. The soft infrastructure has to do with agreements for police and fire and school and all kinds of other kinds of things. And in this compressed budget season, because we are losing revenues because of internet taxes and so on, we really have to be very careful about how aggressive we are with respect to annexation. But the whole annexation question is a legitimate one. That is, if you annex a piece of property, you are going to commit to all of these services. I have another issue with this. There is kind of a piecemeal approach that we can pick and choose. We just want an extension of sewer. We don't want the police and fire. We don't, you know, there is an issue with all of this. We need to work through this. But I certainly will support the extension of the tabling in order to get some more information. And I would encourage whoever is out there listening, Mr. Potterfield or Mr. Bechtold or whoever else, that this is in all of our interest to come to some public-private partnership that makes sense here, given the fact that we've come across this issue that has doubled the cost of this beyond which we were dealing with on the original bond issue. So these are serious considerations. I'm willing to give it enough time, and I will make that motion that we extend this decision until the November 7th meeting.
Gentleman's made a motion to table. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Thomas. Any further comment on the motion
to
table?
And now I'd like to respond to Carl's comments. And again, in the interest of preparing for another discussion of this in 5 weeks' time, another thing we could consider as a council is not to proceed with this project until we've conducted an area planning process, such as has been very well done in the East Area Plan and the Northeast Area Plan, that we should consider some kind of long-term and inclusive process involving landowners, utility customers, utility engineers, planners, and negotiate a written plan that reflects the majority consensus viewpoint of the community as to whether we should be annexing these areas, what land uses they should have, and what utilities they should have. So that's another option for us, to delay making this move until a proper planning process has been conducted.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I would like to open the public hearing. However, I will tell you there's a motion to table, and if you'd like to speak on the motion to table, whether we should table or not, if not, there's been a date certain that you will also have an opportunity to present public testimony at the November 7th meeting of the City Council. Is there anyone from the public that desires to be heard? Cleek Camp Wilson.
Good evening, Tracy Wilson, Cleek Camp. I just want to add on again about the equity component of this and looking at the metrics, and I really like the things that Ian is bringing up, and I think you have a good point to wait and that we should come to an agreement. And I'm not going to say a consensus, because I think it should, whatever comes out should be a win-win, but I'm still curious about this finding $2 million for this project, and we have issues funding the police, and we have issues funding other infrastructure that exists within the city. So I hope that this doesn't become a practice, And I'm not supportive of doing annexation unless we're in the position to take care of our own in-house needs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further comments? Any further comments? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing until November 7th, 2016. Any additional discussion on the motion to table? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Next order, motion passes. Next order of business will be old business. Seeing none, we'll move to the consent agenda. Madam Clerk, do you want to read the consent agenda, please?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 246-16, 247-16, 248-16, 249-16, 250-16, 251-16, 252-16, 253-16, mm-hmm. and resolutions 145-16, 146-16, and 147-16. Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Vote aye on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala.
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Next order of business will be bills for introduction and first reading. Madam Clerk.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 254-16, 255-16, 256-16, 257-16, 258-16, 259-16, 260-16, 261-16, 262-16, 263-16, 264-16, 265-16, 266-16, 267-16, 268-16, 269-16, 270-16, 271-16, 272-16, and 273-16, first reading.
Thank you very much. Next order of business will be reports. Report 77-16.
So at the July 18th, 2016 meeting, I think Mr. Trapp requested a report on the Good Samaritan Ordinance that was passed in St. Louis, Missouri, and a recommendation from city staff as to whether or not we should adopt a similar ordinance. I think Assistant Chief Jeremiah Hunter and Jason Jones, I'm sorry, here to answer any questions you might have on this particular topic. But I think you've been provided the information as part of this report, and Jason would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Would you like to make a presentation, or do you just want to field any questions?
Yeah, just any questions.
Very good. Mr. Trapp, you want to?
I do have a question. I see that we're recommending of. In some ways, expanding on the St. Louis plan with adding some alcohol offenses, which seem very appropriate for our culture and the risk of alcohol overdose. I think that's very wise and prudent. I also see limiting it under less limited and as far as distribution offenses. Is there any? Has there been problems in St. Louis with that, or is that just? An act of prudence on our part.
I believe just an act of prudence.
Reach out to St. Louis, and I have not heard back from them.
Because I would think more information would be helpful
sure.
to follow the police recommendation on that. If when we have a draft, I want to request a draft ordinance be made. I think it's excellent work. I appreciate that. I think because of the nature of the opioid crisis, it would be good to move along deliberately. I don't think we need to rush, but I think it would be good to move on it soon. But I would need, in order to not limit it to the less offenses in St. Louis, it would be helpful for me to know of some issues in enforcement under the St. Louis law. Otherwise, I think I would prefer. There's an idea that many people engaged in substance use disorder behaviors, will sell to friends or have that connection with the real drug dealer, and I wouldn't want that to be impede the enforcement of the law because someone might have a scale or some, some less of an issue. So that's my concern. So as we draft an ordinance, either allowing us options or having more information will be helpful. But it's an excellent report. I appreciate your work on it and been very fast turnaround.
Thank you.
Any additional questions, comments? Can you give me a typical scenario where EMTs have been called to that scenario and what law enforcement's response would have been and resulting charges?
Well,
or hypothetical, a compelling hypothetical.
Right. I mean, we've experienced calls where there have been several people within one area, one residence that were using. One person overdoses, and everybody panics. They don't know what to do. We've had people put people in bathtubs, trying to think that that would revive them. We've had them take them outside and put them in a common area so that we don't know what apartment that they were using it, using the drugs in. So we see a lot of different scenarios. So I guess from the purpose of what our recommendation is that if we want to move forward with this to offer the immunity for the charge of possession as opposed to somebody who actually distributed heroin and or administered heroin to another person and resulted in their death. So that was kind of the perspective that we came
from. So the qualified immunity would only be on the possession charge?
Possession.
Not on sales or distribution?
Correct.
Have you consulted the prosecutor's office?
We have not. No, this was more of just a review of St. Louis's ordinance.
Any additional questions?
Yeah, I have one.
Mr. Thomas.
I think this is a good ordinance, or it would be a good ordinance if you bring it forward, which I hope you will. But it's only going to be effective if the fact that this is the law is known by the people who are in the circumstances described. So are there particular strategies that St. Louis has used, or are there strategies that you've thought about to communicate the fact of an ordinance change like this, and how would we be able to go about that?
I would agree that there has to be some sort of an awareness campaign to let that be known that that's the case. I still think there would be reservations, and just because this is passed, I don't know that it will lead to more calls. That was one of the things that I reached out to St. Louis Police Department and asked if, even anecdotally, if they could say this has resulted in an increase of willingness of people to report overdoses, but I haven't heard back. So,
I mean, I would think the community outreach unit would be one channel by which this could be sort of systematically disseminated in those areas at least.
Sure.
But I think it's important if we do this to create a robust communications plan.
Sure.
So that it actually makes a difference.
Right.
Mr. Scala.
Yeah, just a question. I don't want to get too locked into the silo of taking a look at this from a strictly local perspective. I mean, I know you've reached out to St. Louis and some of the other areas. I think the issue here would be to try and harvest any potential problems that St. Louis has encountered and any potential issues that commend this process to that kind of thing. That I think that's the kind of focus that we need to have with respect to some of these other benchmark communities that have tried this. I mean, we don't want to go down the road of just adopting something someone else has done, whether or not it applies to our particular circumstance, if they have had some egregious failures on the part of what they have done. We should know if there are some particular things that commend this process to the St. Louis experience that we ought to be taking advantage of when we're considering it. So I just don't want to get locked into this whole idea that we're, you know, that this is an issue that we can apply from outside on this, on our particular circumstance, and it will solve the problem. I would rather err on the side of caution to make sure that we understand what the liabilities and the positives are for the St. Louis experience before we start codifying this.
Right. And I think there are legal questions as well as to what we can offer immunity for. And obviously I'm not the person to speak to that, but so all those things would have to be discussed. So,
Dr. Peters.
Yeah, that would just be my question. If we talk to the prosecutors or whoever, maybe our legal staff here, as to make sure that this ordinance also is something that is appropriate,
right,
from the court system.
Nothing further. You want to offer a motion or offer some direction?
Yeah, would you like a motion?
That would be fantastic.
I would move that to direct staff to bring forward an ordinance based upon the police recommendations, but also giving us an option if we're allowed to include possession or distribution as the St. Louis ordinance.
Second that motion.
Any discussion? Everyone okay with that? All those in favor? Yeah, saying
I just want to make sure that discussion, I mean, the ordinance and the discussion includes that analysis to make sure that we have an analysis of the pluses and minuses that St. Louis may have experienced while we're considering this. So,
fair enough. Everyone without objection. Thank you. Next order of business will be general comment.
We vote.
All those without objection, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Very good. Next order of business will be general comments from the public, council, and staff. Is there anyone from the public that desires to seek recognition? Ms. Fowler, for what reason do you seek recognition?
Mayor and council. For the record, my name is Pat Fowler, and I live at 606 North 6th Street. I can't be here on October 17th, and with your permission, I'd like to speak in favor of something on that agenda, and that is the purchase of the Roth property, which is Council Bill 27316. The last time, may I have your permission to
discuss it?
The last time we discussed this parcel, it was part of a larger development, and it included land to the east across the creek and 121 linear feet of Flat Branch Creek that was set to be covered with asphalt as a parking lot. Most recently, on September 8th and at prior meetings, my citizen colleagues and I spoke to you about this, and there's never seems to be enough time to tell you in specific detail our concerns. So I wanted to just revisit two points for you. First, Flat Branch Park. This was reclaimed from former industrial uses, contaminated soil that has been remediated, and is one of the finest parks that Columbia offers to its citizens. It's a place where not only does it honor the importance of the creek next to it and the history of the founding of Columbia, but Parks and Rec do an excellent job with their choice of architectural design elements of keeping with the history of our community. Regarding the creek, in leading up to that public hearing on September 8th, I spoke either voice to voice or face to face with the Army Corps of Engineers and our stormwater staff. And they agree that we don't have sufficient protections for the water quality of the creek. By your purchase of the Roth property and your choice not to cover 121 linear feet of the creek with asphalt, you will go a long way to improving the water quality of Flat Branch Creek. Our Parks and Rec Department is skilled at putting in sloughs and rain gardens to mitigate any adverse effects from runoff. We won't have petroleum running into the creek because under our current schemes, we have no filter for that. And I also want to talk about how important it is for us to be able to have that additional green space that is in alignment with our plans. And finally, if you'll indulge me for a minute, I want to talk about history and historic preservation. One of my favorite volunteer projects is to research and write walking tours for downtown. And you all know that this part of downtown is crucial to the completion of the African American Heritage Trail that we've been talking about for several years. I've come to appreciate how standing in front of any building or vacant lot or address in downtown Columbia, you can see what was there as well as what is there. And we have an example of the recent reopening of the John Williams Blind Bean home. You can stand in front and you can hear the piano that the neighbors heard when he was home from tours. I can stand at the corner and see where William Jewell's house was, and I know what it looks like, and so I still see it there. I see the livery up on the corner where Richard Gentry tried to relocate the business district of downtown and successfully did so by building a livery. So what you're doing with this purchase is you're giving us an opportunity to reconnect with our history and to offer other citizens the opportunity to see that as well. We have a lot in common. We wanted to have a community that we raised our families in, that provided a healthy environment and gave us civic pride. And if you vote to purchase the Roth property and protect Flat Branch Creek and Flat Branch Park, you're doing that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. I appreciate you being here tonight. Anyone else from the public? Reverend Gray.
James Gray. So good to see our city manager sitting in, our deputy city manager. I come before you because there are some issues that I believe that we're overlooking here in the city of Columbia with our young people. due to all respect, our Columbia Police Department is already running thin with the resources that they have. In due respect, I do appreciate you all giving over $500,000 to the Boys and Girls Club. But in giving that $500,000, I think you all missed a point. Because on Friday and Saturday night, when we got over 150 young kids, black and white, downtown, and then when I, who are friends with CPD, go down there, and you got to deal with the drunks, and then you got to deal with the young people, it makes for a long night for them. And you all know it's just a matter of time before something's going to happen down there with our young people and the drunks. And CPD is stretched thin. So I was asking our mayor at a thing about, we have a youth advisory commission. And one of the things that I would like to know is, number one, who's running it? Because number two, we need to really start working. Because as you all have a vision, and while you're at home at midnight when I'm downtown, and there's 7-8-year-old kids downtown, and siblings are raising siblings, and when my officers are saying, James, where's the people? Where's the community leader? But we gave $500,000 to Boys and Girls Club, who's not open at these times. And granted, they're getting money to build a basketball, but basketball, it ain't all about basketball. It's doing what's right. And I hold every single one of you accountable if something dare happens to our kids downtown, because we are looking past everything that we need to look past. You all need to step up and take accountability and see what we could do to help our kids, to help what we could do to help CPD, that something like that does not happen. I've been talking to the University Police Department about they need to get out and come downtown and monitor their own students. We shouldn't have to do that. Or come and do a joint effort. I hold you all accountable to go to the university, to go to Hank Foley, and said, hey, we need you all to help, because we're dealing with a lot of yes students between the hours of 8 and 3 a.m., Broadway, 9th Street, 10th Street, Hart Pose, all over downtown. And it's just a matter of time before something's going to happen. And I am willing, as I told the mayor, with the Youth Advisory Committee, to sit on the board, because it's time for us to start asking them, what do they need? I hold every single one of you all accountable, because you all are elected officials in our city. You all are held accountable also. And so I just want to give you all something to think about. What could we do as the city of Columbia to take care of downtown, get a place for our young people to go, so it won't, to make these guys' jobs a lot easier and all of that? That's all I want to say. Thank you all.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Mr. Scala.
I just want to ask a question. You had some really good suggestions, particularly as it relates to our relationship with the university and the university stepping up and so on, and in our ability to deal with the Boys and Girls Clubs with the grant and to help
Absolutely.
That whole thing out in terms of social equity. And I hear you. I think there's a lot that we can do. And I also accept the accountability that you're throwing in this direction, because we're elected officials. We ought to be accountable for that. I want to know, what is it that we can do? What more can we do? What do you have a real sense of where we should be going with this? I mean, we're trying to balance lots of...
Absolutely, absolutely. Know. Well, number one, let's look at, like, the art, for example. Half our kids goes out there on Saturday, Sunday to play basketball. Everybody don't have vehicles, walking distance, whether you black or white. Parents drop you off and all of that. We need to find something in Central Columbia that's number one, open. And I'm not talking about just basketball. I'm not talking about just babysitting. We need, as once again, I came before you all and said, we got a great program in the career program, the care program, okay, which is partner with the city and to work and all of that. Let's find something in Central Columbia. If we're talking about spending $1 million down here for a land, yeah, let's build something on that land so the kids could go to. We have to come up with something. We got to make these guys' job offer easy. We got to make the university accountable. The thing that I was telling our mayor is we got a committee with these young people. Let's bring them up here, set them behind, and get the grown-ups to come up here and find out what they're wanting. What they're wanting. It's simple. We got a committee. I got a 16-year-old daughter. And she tells me, Dad, mall is trouble. Downtown is trouble. Dad, we need something for us to do that's going to be positive and something that we could give back.
Can we get them down here to
well, we got a commission. Don't we have that youth commission, Mr. Mayor?
So when I spoke...
I could provide some information about that if you
like. Sure, hang on just a moment. When James and I spoke earlier last week, he brought up the youth advisory commissioner. Can we have some type of feedback from them? And I've thought about that a lot since Friday, Reverend Gray, and I think we should also maybe include someone from Parks and Rec just to talk about the facilities we have. What are the barriers to that? Is it a time thing of when they're open? Is it a transportation issue of getting to the Arc versus the Armory versus Douglas Park, if we want that open at night? You know, what is that, you know, what are some of the other options that are available associated with that? So I think that would be, and the Youth Advisory Council and Mr. Thomas, I'd ask you, and they were kind of looking for the next agenda item, and I'm wondering if maybe
right.
This isn't the appropriate segue.
Absolutely. So the Youth Advisory Council meets next on Tuesday the 11th, okay, which is a week from tomorrow, at 6 o'clock in the conference rooms over there. I'm the city council representative to the Youth Advisory Council, and that meeting will start with me making a pitch to them that they should work with city staff, police department, the city manager's office, and others to take a look at our social equity plan in the three neighborhoods, as well as using their own communication channels.
What do you mean in the three neighborhoods?
The city has this social equity plan, which
absolutely
is focused on the Douglas neighborhood,
no,
a neighborhood in North Columbia, and a neighborhood in Northeast Columbia.
You're missing the point. I'm not talking about those three neighborhoods. I'm talking about the city of Columbia. Same issues out in the Fifth Ward as there is in the First Ward.
Well, the point I'm making is that I'm going to ask the Youth Advisory Council to engage in the exact kind of thinking that you're talking about, looking at how the city serves youth, how the city thinks about equity related to youth, policing related to youth, and it might be a great opportunity for you to come as well and meet members of the Youth Advisory Council and present the things that you'd like them to do. But they are looking for projects to do. They advise the city council, and I think there's a synergy here.
Okay. But still, yet you missed the point. You said a three, and I'm talking about the city of Columbia as a whole. Okay, Fifth Ward, all the wards. It just doesn't happen in those three wards.
Well, the point I was making was that the city has embarked on a program of specific policing activities and resources that is, by as it happens, targeted on three neighborhoods. That's something that the Youth Advisory Council can study and come back to us with recommendations for how we're doing in that area.
I get that, but if that's the case, I would like to maybe help serve on it because I still don't think you really get it. But anyway, that's just my
I think we've question. Got some ongoing dialogue. Thank you, James. Any additional comments from the public? Seeing none, are there any comments from council members? Anyone like to go first? Mr. Thomas.
Yeah, I've got a few. This council has supported Room at the Inn for each of the last 3 years with things like bus passes, a small amount of funding from the council reserve fund, getting police overtime increased to cover that winter homeless shelter that typically runs from around about Christmas time through till the end of February. It's always been a considerable concern of mine that the cold weather in Missouri typically starts. It get the average temperature, nighttime low, drops below freezing, typically around about the 1st of December. And 3 years ago, there was a very cold December, and the Unitarian Church kind of stepped up and opened up an unofficial part of room at the inn for that December. The last 2 years, there has been no winter shelter for homeless people in December, but I have always been very concerned that there would be a cold December and we'd have a real, you know, humanitarian crisis on our hands. So I've been working over the last 6 months or so to find a way to open room at the inn earlier, open it in early December, and have kind of brought together the Unitarian Church again with the room at the inn organizers and reached an agreement. Now this will, and the room at the inn is now going to open on, I think it's December the 6th. This will cost room at the inn some more money, and so what I would like to do, and there is a precedent for this, we've made contributions, I'd like to propose that we allocate from our city council reserve $3,000, which will cover about 50% of the additional cost for an additional 2 weeks of room at the inn. Related to that, the city and the United Way of Heart of Missouri United Way is hosting a homelessness summit in November, and that event needs funding support as well. And I'd like to propose also that we allocate $3,000 to the homelessness summit. So this would be a total of $6,000. I forget what our remaining balance on the fiscal 2017 council reserve is, but it's substantially more than that.
I believe it's $41,000.
So I'd like to make that motion, $3,000 for room at the inn and $3,000 for the homelessness summit.
Any discussion or comments?
Ian, can you give me some information? The homelessness summit, I think I went to last year, but I can't remember what it is that we need for them.
I'll second Ian's, if that's a motion. All I'll right. Second Ian's motion and answer your question. Mr. Scal and I have served on the Planning Commission. It's a United Way-led community initiative to bring stakeholders together around coming up with a unified strategy to address homelessness, to set community goals. The City of Columbia has had goals that have emerged through our Social Services Department, through the great work of Steve Hollis. This would be more of a comprehensive look. There'll be some mapping exercises that I'm going to lead with the VA, with service providers, to look at sort of a gap analysis and a mapping of what services and resources we bring to bear to kind of rationalize the process of how we're going to spend. We spend about $300,000 on basic needs and support with the city, but there's a number of other kind of resource bases. And so we feel like it might be more effective if we had a community-endorsed strategy and kind of did outreach and brought in more partners who are able to impact the situation from all angles, from the emergency shelter angle, from the affordable housing angle. So it's a weekend event, I believe November, 17th and 18th?
I think it's a Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, so United Way is putting up a substantial amount of money. There's a lot of in-kind donations, and it's their hope that the city would be able to help in the amount of $3,000.
Yeah, just a comment. Yeah, Mr. Trapp and I did attend the planning session for this. This is a very worthwhile cause. I mean, I have absolutely no objection to this. We tended to kind of describe the strategy by which we would bring this before the council and so on. I'm a little surprised at this, but I don't really care. I mean, I don't care who brings it up and in what order. I think it's a good cause, and I certainly will support it. That wasn't my take on the timing and so on and so forth, but that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. So I think this is a worthwhile cause. I certainly will support it.
Any additional discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Okay. One clear. Anything else?
Yeah. I want to comment on two of the scheduled public comment speakers this evening. Kim Wischmeyer's point, I spoke to him on the phone before he came. I'm not sure if he's still here. There he is. but I think his point was that when he inquired to city staff about the compliance or non-compliance of these particular signs, the response he got indicated a concern about upsetting certain political parties or candidates or entities. So I hope that that's not the case in the city staff and that we should enforce the ordinances fairly and impartially and equally to everybody. But that is, as I understand it, Mr. Wischmeyer's primary concern here. And I'm going to be following up to ask for a review of that case and the staff's response. And then a similar kind of concern, Mr. Hutchinson's presentation suggested that he had asked Mike Hester from the COU to attend. Now, I feel very confident that it was an error and it kind of slipped through the net, but I'd appreciate it if you could look into that request for Sergeant Hester or Lieutenant Hester to speak at the Blind Boone Center and how that kind of got miscommunicated. And then my final thing, I just want to invite all of you and really invite everybody to attend an event that's a fundraiser for Access Arts, which is a charity that creates opportunity for people with disabilities and other disadvantaged people to learn the arts. I've been asked to do something I've never done before. I mean, maybe I did it when I was kind of in pre-elementary school, but I am creating a painting at the moment, and I've been asked to do this by Access Arts, and I've been paired with a really good painter by the name of David Spear, who's given me lots of help, and it's really been quite a lot of fun. So I'm creating a painting right now, which is going to be auctioned at an event called Celebrati. Jeff Jones, another member of the police department, is also a part of this program, and he's working with another professional artist, as is Vicky Wilson, and a number of other people in the city have been paired with artists. So I think this is a wonderful event, October the 27th, and if you're interested, I have tickets.
Mr. Trapp.
Sure, just a few brief things. I also would appreciate some follow-up in regards to the sign ordinance. We ought to enforce that. Even-handedly, I think in general, the only thing we proactively go out and inspect for is grass because we have some real health issues and we know grass comes in the summer, so we're able to staff it. But, you know, when we get reports, we generally enforce, and I think that's a wise policy. And I'm sure it'll be a piece of education if it's been allowed by inaction, as, you know, lots of things are. We've got a lot of complex laws. I'm sure there was no ill will on staff's part, but I think that'd be good to address. If it's more complicated than that, a report, I think, might be in order. Secondly, I sent some information to Mr. Klebein on the Texas dip. If you follow Second Ward politics, it's the one of the biggest things that I hear about from constituents. And if you go down Texas, there's this sharp curve where it drops below at a creek, and I believe the cross street is Jackson. So there was a motorcycle fatality there 10 years ago, and I wondered about looking at a guardrail. I've already talked – this is why I love the city of Columbia, because I sent this email this afternoon, and streets David Nichols said, hey, we'll get that striped later this week. So there's issues in regards to striping, but that's already been taken care of. There's issues about sight lines in regards to the brush. That was the main complaint that I heard about. And then there's some lighting issues. And before I really hammer those, I like to get out and experience those at dark. But I know that that's every time I get out and parkade, that's a real common thing that people talk about. And with the great new where we resurfaced Texas, which was great, on combining it with the new water line out there. So we did that big, but now we've got this great smooth surface that people are using like a racetrack. And so no good deed goes unpunished. But I appreciate the striping and looking forward to seeing what we can do about the sight lines in regards to the brush and some lighting. And then it might need a report, but if the possibility of adding a guardrail there, if that's would be a big enough project to need to be in the CIP, it's a big deal. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ruffin? Ella?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. Actually, that occurred on the introduction of first reading. I won't be here for the next meeting. God, I think this is the first time I've missed in this term that I've been elected. But it always seems that these things crop up, that there are always important issues that come up when you're not going to be there. But that's the way it is. I mean, it happened to Mr. Thomas as well. Two things in particular. One's rather parochial. The other is a little bit less so. The parochial matter has to do with the Berrywood Forest, and then there's a good deal of interest in the Berrywood Forest. This goes all the way back to 2008, where I participated in the original decision to rezone some of this property, which was nominally called the Berrywood Forest, for an OP plan that at that time involved a little bit more dense development than what the development is coming across now with this piece of property. That went through planning and zoning, went through the city council and so on, and was voted in. The company that was originally going to build this project in this area on the Keene Street Medical Corner, and it was supposed to be a large piece of property, a four-story development and so on and so forth, that went bankrupt, and the bank took over the piece of property, and it was subsequently purchased, and then now there is a new development proposal. It's coming before the city council now on first reading in this agenda, and it will be voted on at the next meeting, apparently, having to do with downsizing this to about a quarter of the size of what it was originally proposed, with more buffers and so on and so forth. But the neighborhood is very concerned about this, and it's a very controversial issue in the Woodridge neighborhood, primarily based upon the fact that that development is now occurring, and it was kind of dormant for a period of time. The neighborhood could not come together to purchase the property. The city did not have the money to purchase this virgin territory, if you will. So the development is proceeding, and the bill before us will have to do with amending the OP plan and the statement of intent to downsize this property. The argument that a lot of the folks, and I'm hearing a lot about it from the neighborhood, has to do with traffic on Keene Street and this medical corner, and it's awful. You know, you were stuck in it. I got stuck in it.
Both been late for meetings.
It's really awful. We have improved some of these conditions on Keene Street. We've resurfaced Keene Street. We've put a street light on St. Charles Road. There is a roundabout in the works for I-70 Drive Southeast, where the grocery store and the motel are. I think that will solve the problem, but there are a lot of folks in the neighborhood that are very skeptical that this roundabout will not solve the problem. So, to make a long story short, it's going to be controversial, and I won't be here. And I kind of feel guilty about that. I mean, the whole idea of not being able to weigh in on this. I will tell my constituents how I feel about this in an email, and I trust the city council will render whatever is necessary given the recommendations of the Planning and Zoning Commission. But it's a very sensitive area in the neighborhood. And I just want to bring it to your attention to pay some attention to how we deliberate on this issue. The other, so I won't be here. So it's a non-issue. Unless, of course, you see fit to table it and get me involved in this thing anyway. And that's certainly your prerogative. The other issue, it has to do with the Roth property. And that's, that has made the news. And that pits the whole former issue of the CVS properties and so on. I was involved in that on a number of votes, and whether or not we ought to proceed with the purchase of this property, or at least give the go ahead to the negotiations so that we can proceed with this. And I hate to not be in on this. It's such a big deal. But that's another thing. I'm going to have to defer to the City Council here because I simply won't be here. Just want to bring these things up and let the public know. These are a couple of hot topics, one rather parochial. The other is probably a bigger issue citywide. So keep your ears open and your eyes open and come down and testify and help the rest of the City Council out here. I won't be able to. So.
Thank you, Mr. Scallon. I've got two items, one procedural. The first, however, I had a call from a University of Missouri professor regarding the sidewalk and street closure at Elm Street, and the professor made a good comment that during peak hours of 11 till 2, there's so much student traffic and other traffic parked up and down, I guess, 5th Street and Elm Street there. It's very difficult to get a fire truck through. And it occurred to me that we've approved three sidewalk and street closures independent of each other. So you have the ACC development at Turner and Providence. You've got the new Elm Street, and then you've got 9th Street. And probably didn't take – they were probably approved independent of each other. And in conjunction with each other probably has created some unintended traffic controversies, and maybe it'd be helpful to do an informal traffic study from Public Works or Planning and Development, Community Development down there during that time period and just kind of get a snapshot of how traffic and pedestrian traffic is moving in those areas, and maybe we can phase or move some fences back as we accommodated some of the 9th Street rise sidewalk issues there to and, you know, maybe such a thing that ACC is wrapping up and the other can expand out, but it'd be nice to have a fresh set of eyes on that in the context of how all three of those sidewalk and street closures are interacting with each other, if that's okay. And then I noticed on the consent agenda, I may have failed to ask the city clerk to read each of the bills a second time before we did a roll call, and just to reflect that in the minutes, would you mind to call the consent agenda again so that each bill has been read a second time, and then call the roll again?
Do it twice this time or just the once?
You tell me what. I know you read them once.
Yeah, I'll just do it twice just
to
be safe.
Would you mind to call the consent agenda again?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 246-16, 247-16, 248-16, 249-16, 250-16, 251-16, 252-16, 253-16, and resolutions 145-16, 146-16, and 147-16.
So now, Madam Clerk, would you call the agenda again and then call the roll?
Bills 246-16, 247-16, 248-16, 249-16, 250-16, 251-16, 252-16, 253-16, and resolutions 145-16, 146-16, and 147-16. Mr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Treese?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Trapp?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Thank you. My apologies. Without objection, is there a motion to adjourn at 8:22?
So moved.
Thank you. We are adjourned.
This is definitely the earliest finish in my nearly 4 years. I'm